Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 255.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition, 2, 1, 0, we have a liftoff. We have a liftoff and it's lighting up the areas. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and this week we're joined by Thomas DJ. Thomas is the author of the new book Shadow Legion Nightmare City, along with numerous other works over the last few years, particularly from Airship 27. And I am excited to have you on today. How are you today, Thomas?
I'm doing fine, thank you very much, man.
All right. Well, it's great to have you on the show, I believe, for the first time. This is your first time, right?
That is correct, sir.
All right. That's correct. Well, we should have done it a long time ago, but we've rectified that now. So, you, sir, how would you describe what you do in the pulp and fiction community?
Well, right now I divide my time between the Shadow Legion stuff, which is basically Neo superheroes, and the Don Quavo stuff, which is weird Western.
Ah, and let's see, who publishes the weird Western?
Mainly, the Don Quavo stuff comes through Pulpworks Press.
Okay, so you put out, what, about a year, 2, 3 years ago, Shadow Legion, New Roads to Hell. And that was where you first introduced this cast of characters in this sort of scenario?
That's correct.
But it's part of a, is it part of a, I know that you are very close with everybody's good buddy, Derek Ferguson, and I know that you guys have kind of a shared universe also. Is it part of this or is it a separate thing?
Well, this is part of what we call the Chimera Falls universe.
Okay.
Don Quavo's a part of it. Everything that I write, more or less, is a part of it. Derek and I have talked in the past many times about doing a collaboration featuring one of his characters and one of mine. I think the most recent thing that we've talked about is getting Dylan and the Nightbreaker together for an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, his worlds are his world, and my world is my world.
Okay, so, but I mean, I was thinking that for some reason he and a couple other people also did stuff in Nocturne City. Is that just yours?
Oh, no, you're thinking of Sovereign City.
Ah, yes, that's what I'm thinking of. That's it, okay.
Sovereign City stuff through Crochet Press, yes.
Okay.
And I'm supposed to do something one of these days with that, yes, that's what you're thinking of.
Okay, all right. Well, your new book, which we're mainly here to talk about, but I want to get kind of all the background on it and on you too. Your new book is called Shadow Legion Nightmare City, and it's the second volume, is right? It's the second thing you've done with this with these characters? Okay. And I'm just going to point out it's from Airship 27. That's our good friends Ron Fortier and Rob Davis, and I've done quite a few things for them as well. Love Airship. Your book is illustrated by Vincent Marchesano. Is that correct?
I hope that's how we pronounce it. I don't know how I heard his name pronounced, though. So.
All right. Well, before we dig all into this particular book and characters and your previous thing in this universe, let's talk a little about you. Who would you say were probably your major influences in making you the writer you are and it's taking you in this particular direction?
Well, I like to say that when it comes to my short stories, Warren Zevon taught me more than any writer ever did. In terms of the fact that he was able to distill his stories into 3 minutes or less. As far as the neo-superhero stuff, Steve Gerber was a major, major influence.
Mm-hmm.
He was like the first comic book author that I became aware of and started following when I was a young kid. Of course, other people from the 70s, Steve Englehart, Jim Starlin, Bill Mantlo.
Sure.
Mostly I was a Marvel zombie as a kid, so that's where I got most of my comic book entertainment from.
Yeah, I hear you. We have a shared genetic background there in terms of material, for sure. Starlin and Mantlo, absolutely, yeah. So, when you decided to do superheroes, you've kind of gone in a different direction maybe with them than, like, for example, when I do the Sentinels, they really are just like your pure, Avengers, Justice League, standard superhero group fighting world-shattering menaces. But your guys have more of the occult to them. Would you say that's fair?
That's fair.
Well, how would you describe what makes them different from run-of-the-mill superheroes?
Well, in a way, I've always liked to say that if your Sentinels were the Avengers, my guys are the Defenders.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And in the way that the Defenders always dealt with the weirder side of the superhero universe, and to another extent, the Doom Patrol.
Yes.
They always got the villains who were just too crazy for other people to deal with. That's how I look at the Shadow Legion. They actually started out as a fanfic proposal.
Okay.
Believe it or not, if it wasn't for the fact that I got really pissed off at the New 52, we would never have had this.
Isn't that funny? What did you dislike about that made you create your own thing? How did that play out? Tell us that story.
Well, it was actually the culmination of a couple of years of disappointment with the way that comics had gotten darker.
Mm-hmm.
And it became more and more obvious that this was a world I didn't want to hang out in anymore. And when the New 52 came along, it was an easy jumping off point.
Yeah, I don't think that's how they intended it, but that is kind of how it played out for a lot of people. It's almost like the cover said, great new jumping off point.
Yes. Here's where you can go away now.
Yeah, that's great. So how did that turn into a fan fiction proposal that turned into the Shadow Legion?
Well, the fan fiction proposal was for somebody who wanted to actually do what the New 52 was originally planning on doing, which was taking existing characters and rejiggering them. So I took a bunch of DC characters and reworked them. And as I was reworking them, I realized that they were going so far afield of the original inspirations that I might as well make them into original characters.
Mm-hmm.
So I sent out the proposal to a bunch of my writer friends and said, am I right in thinking this, that these should not be tied into the DC universe, but be something totally of their own? And within about 20 minutes, I think, Ron Fortier wrote me back and said, not only do I think that these should be original characters, if you write this, I will publish it.
Nice. Very good. Very good. Yeah.
So he's been trying to get me to write something for him for a long time. So that gave me the impetus to get off my ass and finally get my first novel done.
Yeah. So, you know, before we depart that topic, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, so many of us in the new pulp community, quite a few of us at least, either did some dabbling in or got started in fan fiction back in the 90s, I guess, really. That's certainly what I did. I was writing Avengers stories for my Avengers website and starting MV1. One of these days I got to do a show just on the old classic days 25 years ago of fan fiction on the internet when it first got started. And I mean, I felt like, you know, people at the time scoffed and looked down on fan fiction. And I understand that perspective in a way, particularly from professionals at the time. But I think that looking back now, a lot of us who are more professional now, that was very beneficial. How do you see that?
Oh, yeah. No, it was a good place to cut your teeth on the type of high adventure that we ended up doing in the new pulp movement.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it funny how prescient a lot of fan fiction is in terms of what eventually happened with the big two.
Yeah.
In terms of some of the developments that happened. And it's like, there was a time once where I proposed a Seven Soldiers fanfic series for, I think it was DC Legends.
Mm-hmm.
And about 3 or 4 years later, the same thing came out from the same concept came out for Grant Morrison. I know that it was just two people coming up with the same idea at the same time, because that thing never came to fruition. So,
yeah.
But it's funny because like a lot of the stuff nowadays, except without the violence and the sex and the blood and the gore, reflect a lot of things that were going on in fanfic back in the early aughts.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And I mean, when you have that many creative people that are kind of working in the minor leagues in a way, you know, of course you're going to get some stuff that bubbles mm-hmm. up that's top quality. There's no doubt about it. You know, we were doing Avengers, very optimistic, positive, classic stuff. Several others and I, you know, like 2 or 3 years before Kurt Busiek and George Perez came to the Avengers and started doing that kind of Avengers story again, which was very popular.
Right.
Now we couldn't have foreseen where Bendis was going to take it, and that was another one of those great jumping off points, which quite a few of us did. But anyway, okay, so you created these characters first. Let's talk a little bit about them. You've got four. This is what's interesting. Now, your first book was it? Well, I'm having a hard time enunciating this. This book is like an anthology that you wrote all four stories, and it's four solo adventures.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, with the first book, which I didn't read. The first book was it a group team effort, or was it four solo stories also?
The way I like to put it is that the first book was a graphic collection that compiled the whole storyline of the Shadow Legion comic book.
Okay.
This book is like one of those, you know, like back in Walmart, you would get these poly bag group of three comics.
Yep.
Three random comics. So this is basically a poly-bagged group of comics from that comic book line.
Right.
Which feature four individual stories, but featuring each of the four individual Shadow Legionnaires.
Okay. All right. So what made you decide to do four solo adventures in this book?
Well, the intention was always that the even number books were going to be solo adventures, and the odd number books were going to be straight novels.
Okay. Okay. That's an interesting idea. Okay. And they're kind of wrapped up in these stories. Like, you know, one thing that some people like about mine and some people don't like is that mine kind of continue over three books. Like one big group story continued over three novels, and people particularly always hate the second one because it has no beginning and no ending, you know, just like The Two Towers or The Empire Strikes Back, as I always say. But but you kind of get everything in a book, right? There's not a lot of cliffhanger.
Well, in the first book, there was something of a minor cliffhanger.
Okay.
And in this book, there are characters introduced who are going to go forth in future books, and there is a menace that becomes the major menace of the third of the next novel.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of got that impression, but it's hard to know, you know, what's in your mind as to where you're planning to go. So,
Well, the third novel's already done.
Ah, okay.
So, in fact, I'm working on the fourth book as we speak, which is once again going to be four individual stories, but this one has a thematic link to them.
Okay, all right. That's really interesting. What was your inspiration, if anything, to kind of do it that way? Because that's kind of a very specific way of laying it out.
Well, like I said, it was just trying to capture different ways people experience comics.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the third book is actually kind of like an annual, where you have a major storyline in the front, and then you have like a little backup story in the back.
Okay. That's cool.
Because we have the major story is about 52,500 words long, and we have a 7,500 word short story in the back.
Ah, I see the hand.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, from those numbers, I see the hand of Editor Fortier at work.
Yes. Well, you know, he loves those 15,000 word stories, and I said to him, well, let's see, if we do four 15,000 word stories, that's a 60,000 word book.
Right.
He said, yeah, that's true. I said, okay. And I had four characters. I said, well, let's do it. Let's do the series this way then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the experience I've had as well. Ron likes to kind of adhere to the classic pulp formula where you have either a 60,000 word novel or 15,000 word stories divvied up in various permutations. Over the years, I've handed him different permutations. Like, we had a Mars McCoy book that was 45,000 and then a 15,000. And we've had 3 15s and 2 7,500s. I've made him have to get the calculator out a time or two. So that's really cool. Okay, so you rounded out that way. So that's neat. Well, before we get to kind of where you're going, then let's continue looking here. Tell us a little about these characters. Let's start out in the kind of the order you have them here with the ferryman. What is the ferryman all about, and what makes him appealing?
Okay, the ferryman was a character. This is one of these characters where there's no connection almost with the original character.
Okay.
He was a rich owner of a radio station who found himself blind due to an accident. But because he was blind, another sense opened up where he could sense the other world.
Mm.
And as such, the ghosts of the newly dead are attracted to him, particularly the violently newly dead.
Right.
Who demand he become their avatar of vengeance.
Okay.
So he's kind of, you know, probably the darkest of the four characters.
I love the name. It kind of implies, I guess it's the Styx song. He doesn't get paid a lot, right?
Yeah. No. He gets paid with having the people go away when they're avenged. That's what he gets paid with.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay. So what sort of powers and abilities does he have? And so does he switch? I mean, is he permanently in that state now, or does he switch back and forth, or what?
No, he's permanently in that state. And the other thing is that even though he's blind, the spirits give him sight.
Okay.
And actually give him, as he puts it in the first book, better than sight, in that different, since he can have multiple spirits come out to provide him with the sight, he can go from different angles. He can look at things from four different perspectives.
Okay.
Almost multitask with his sight, so to speak.
Right. That's pretty cool. And I believe it's in this story that you first introduced this Rose Red character that's sort of the nemesis of this installment.
Well, the Rose Red was the main villain in the first novel, New Roads to Hell.
Okay.
As of this point, everybody thinks she's dead.
Okay.
The operative word is thinks. I mean, I'm not giving anything away to anybody who's read the first novel.
Right.
And, of course, because she is responsible for the accident, Ferryman is particularly dogged in wanting to see her dead as much as possible.
Aha. Okay. And what's her sort of shtick? What makes her a menace?
As I like to call her, she's the girl with the talent for murder. By killing people, she gets to absorb their life force. And she can use that life force for various different effects. She could make herself stronger, faster, and she could extend her own life.
Okay. She reminds me in a way of like somebody that Moon Knight would have dealt with back in the 80s. Did you ever read those Moon Knights?
Yeah.
And that sort of like half real world, half sort of macabre supernatural character that you never quite know if they're
man's built in Kevin stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it kind of evokes that same sense, at least to me, reading it and hearing you talk about it. Yeah, that's very cool. Okay, so your second character that gets a story here is Nightbreaker. And again, these are great names. I just love the names that you've got for these four characters. So what is Nightbreaker all about?
Nightbreaker is kind of the closest we have to a real new pulp character. He is what they call a midnight man. The theory goes that the tick of the clock between 11:59 and 12 o'clock is a kind of a limbo. And if you die between those ticks of 11:59 p.m. and 12 a.m., you slip into another dimension. So Nightbreaker lives in another dimension and is able to interface with our dimension through a series of discipline, mantras, and such, which gives him the ability to kind of disappear and appear at will. But other than that, he's the most technologically based of the characters. His signature weapon is the multi-gun, which allows him to fire different payloads, which record for different effects. And he tends to be the one that flies up on the rooftops and does all the daring do.
Nice. Okay. Does he serve something of like a Batman role when they're together, or am I misimagining him?
More of a Daredevil role.
Okay.
I'm talking about classic Daredevil, not the Frank Miller, I'm so angsty Daredevil.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. All right, your third character is Black Talon. I love that name. So tell us a little bit about Black Talon.
Black Talon, who is the only character that was not based on a DC character initially. He was actually from a role-playing game that I used to participate in, run by one Vic Aris. Hey, Vic. he's kind of a fusion of Vixen from the Detroit Justice League and the Phantom. He is possessed of an artifact called the Mask of the Circle, where the legend goes that one of the African gods, the trickster god, decided he was going to make this mask and give it to man so the man would behave more like the animals. But instead, this mask gave man insight, so he was able to control the animals.
Okay.
So the wearer of the Mask of the Circle allows the wearer to channel different powers of the animals of the Veldt.
Okay.
So he can get the claws of a lion, or the size of an elephant, or the tough hide of a rhinoceros.
Nice.
But The downturn of this is that if he uses one aspect for too long a period of time at one time, he takes on a bit of the animal's aspect. So he might end up, when he's done, with feathers growing out of his back, a little small patch. Or his eyes might be more cat-like when he comes out of it.
Ah, okay. Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to pause here because we have a message from our sponsor, and we'll be back in just a moment to talk about the fourth member of the Shadow Legion and a little bit more about this book and a little bit more about Thomas. So stay tuned. The Avengers Assemble podcast from White Rocket Entertainment. Creator and fan interviews and discussion about Marvel's Avengers comics, movies, and everything else. From Van Allen Plexico and the Jarvis Heads of AvengersAssemble.net, creators of the best-selling Assembled books and the most fanatical Avengers fans on the face of the earth. Okay, so we are talking to Thomas DJ, the author of Shadow Legion, Nightmare City. This is the second book in his Shadow Legion series. And you said, Thomas, that you've got at least one already done and working on another. So we can expect that this will go on for a little while. And people that start reading at the beginning with New Roads to Hell have lots of good stuff in their future, correct?
Yeah. I mean, I've got things plotted out to book six.
Very nice.
And I also have plans to throw open the gates of the world for other people who want to play in the playground.
Very good. Nice. So there are potentially quite a few books still ahead.
Yes.
Okay. And you seem to be putting them out at a nice pace. I had a good pace going there for a while until other stuff interfered. You know, the Sentinels book I'm writing right now, I plotted most of it in 2009, so it's good to go ahead and get them out while they're fresh and not have it sitting around while you try to desperately to get to that point. You know, that's very good. That's a good approach. Let's see. We haven't talked about Dreamcatcher. That's another great name. You just got four great character names. So. Dreamcatcher seemed very interesting to me. Tell the listeners out here a little bit about that character.
Maybelle Tremons is part of a long line of women who are able to absorb ambient magical energy, which they then can use in various spells or cantrips. Given enough time, she could do practically anything, but the operative word is given enough time and enough resources.
Mm-hmm.
She has with her what I call the battle coat, where she's able to secrete what she thinks might be useful ingredients for her various spells within hidden pockets. And she is probably the most mystical of the four.
Okay. Let me go back now and see what I wanted to ask you about before we're talking about those characters. In the one that jumped out to me, where did it go? When you did your Black Talon story, it's called The Ascension of Indio Black. Again, great title. You're very good with character names and with titles.
Thank you. Yeah, it's
a great title, Indio Black. So, who is Indio Black? Not to spoil too much of the story, but give us a sense of what that's all about, because that's a great name.
Indio Black, and I have to credit Derek Ferguson for that name, because he had that. He told me about this character Yul Brynner played in a Western.
Ah.
And he was always intending on using that as a character name, and I said, do you mind if I borrow it? And he gave me his blessing, and so that's where the name came from. Indio Black is a cult leader who, through his visions, has become convinced that the rise of these superheroes is going to lead to a massive cataclysm. So he's kind of down on them.
Yeah.
And he channels mystical energy in a way that's different from Dreamcatcher, which I don't want to give away.
Right, right. Well, the little description here in the table of contents describes, I assume, describing him as an evil necromancer. So is that kind of in the right direction?
Yeah, that's kind of in the right direction.
Okay, all right. So yeah, there is such a great deal of supernatural. I mean, this is interesting. This is what I thought was interesting. You were describing kind of as the defenders, and I guess the dynamic of the team is very defenders like, but it's in the sense that like you have like if the defenders were Doctor Strange and Damon Hellstrom, and you know, I'm trying to think of the more supernatural Clea, you know, and that
and
angle.
Doctor Voodoo Brother Voodoo back then.
Yeah, Brother Voodoo. That's one that kind of jumped out of my mind as well. The classic. I mean, that's one of the things about the Marvel Universe, by the way, that is so amazing, but so hard for anybody to kind of keep their brain wrapped around, is that there is basically at least one or two or three characters for any sub genre you can think of. So if you want African or Caribbean voodoo based magic, there's a character, you know, because
right.
Over the years, so many different writers have had so many ideas. And see, to me, and you tell me if that's true for you too, to me, one of the great things about what we do in writing our own superhero adventures in our own universe is that we can take the areas that we like the best and do something original with it and only include the parts that we want to include. So, you know, if we want an African magic guy but not a Caribbean magic guy, then we create an African magic
right.
guy but not a Caribbean magic guy. I mean, it's the being able to sort of shape it and prune it to your own interests and likes is a big part of the appeal for me. How does that sound true for you too?
It's part of the heady rush of being able to do whatever you want.
Yeah,
I think, and building a world from the ground up. And yeah, if I want to have, you know, an African, you know, as I put it before, you know, vixen / phantom analog, I could have one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we're going to have in, once again, I'm not kind of giving something away, but there's a character in this book who is going to go on to be a hero who is much more technologically based. Kind of the Iron Man.
Okay.
Archetype. Because I love me some Iron Man.
Sure. So that one's coming up in the future book?
Yeah, in a future book. It's part of it's one of the elements in book 3, although that character still hasn't attained the status at that point.
Right. Okay. Very cool. Well, I would certainly endorse that kind of character as well. I always love Iron Man, and I've got, you know, a couple of armored characters in the Sentinels, so that's very cool. Nocturne City. Now, you know, we know that in the Marvel Universe, you basically have the real world, but with, you know, crazy things happening in it, but it's still more or less supposed to be the real world. DC famously has always had made up cities that can have the personality that their characters need them to have. So, you know, Metropolis is more of a modern New York, whereas Gotham City is a kind of a spooky crime-ridden place that Batman can thrive, you know, and then you have these other cities that, you know, Green Arrow and Green Lantern and everything. So what could you compare Nocturne City to, and what makes it different from just a plain regular city?
Well, the whole idea of using a original city came from the idea that I started at the Golden Age. In the Golden Age, it was always original city.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I took the map and I created analogs for all the major cities. So there's a reference in the first book to the city of Jotun, which is actually Chicago.
Mm.
The version of Chicago. The city of Empire is the version of New York. Nocturne City is supposedly, is closely, probably most closely based on New Orleans.
Okay. Yeah, that really clicks.
Where you have your mystical elements, you have, there's a whole neighborhood that I think is referenced in the first book that's primarily a music venue.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that Nocturne City, we're going to need a place with a mystical background, with a little bit of a gothic atmosphere. So I started building from the ground up, you know?
You know, and that's cool, too, because you'd think that would be used more often. But the only thing I can think of where New Orleans or anything like it's ever been used, I believe, was Shadow Man, the Valiant character.
Yeah. And I think that Peter David's Fallen Angel also either takes place in New Orleans or is in a city that's inspired by New Orleans.
Okay. Okay. That's really cool. But what's neat, though, is that gives it a very strong personality in and of itself as a setting. And that always goes a long way. So how does that city and its personality manifest itself as you're writing these things?
Well, the great thing about building a new city is that whatever you want to have, you can have. And I knew I needed a mystical neighborhood, so I created one. I added a major business district, and also, of course, I had to keep a crib sheet of all the places, so I keep track of where everything is.
Yeah.
But it's kind of reflect. I think there was a line in the advert that I put together, the audio advert I put together for various podcasts in the first book, where I said, you know, a darker kind of city needs a darker kind of protector.
Yeah, that's good. That's real good. Okay, so we've talked about the heroes and the team. For those that are coming into it now, not to give too much away from the first book, because obviously we want them to start back there and read that, but how do these guys, in general, how do these characters get together and have common purpose to work as more than just separate individuals?
Well, in the first book, two of the characters are already established.
Mm-hmm.
And the origin stories of the other two are part of the major spine that runs through the whole novel.
Okay.
And they are connected in a way with the original two.
Nice. Okay.
So there is... Let's just say Indio Black is the only person who's had visions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Of something coming down the pike.
Right. Right. And who... this question occurs to me just because it's something that's been kind of a running inside joke in the Sentinels. Who calls them Shadow Legion, if anybody? Or is it just what the books are called and they don't actually call themselves that?
No, there is a reference to the Shadow Legion in the first book. One of them says, we need a Shadow Legion.
Okay.
As in some, you know, a group that works in the shadows of Nocturne. To keep it safe.
Mm-hmm. That just occurs to me because in my series, they're never actually called the Sentinels. It's just the name of the series. They don't really have a name. And I believe at one point at the end of book three, they start suggesting names if they have a team, and they reject all the names, including the Sentinels, and they go like, oh, well, we'll think of something, and they never do. So I was just wondering if that's like an umbrella name for the series, but not actually the name of the team. Because, like, you know, they actually call themselves the Avengers, for example. You know, everybody
right.
calls them that. So that's pretty neat. So where do you see ultimately this all going? You say you've got a third and fourth book either done or in the works, and you say maybe six?
for the time being, right now, everything is kind of plotted out through the six. There are a couple of other stories that I know I want to get to. You know, we want to get to your, you know, alien invasion story, for example.
Sure.
Everybody has to have an alien invasion story.
Oh, yeah.
And there's also, of course, ultimately what some of these hints that have been in the first two books and are going to go on beyond are going to have to pay off. And I know how they're going to pay off. I just don't know in which book they're going to pay off in yet.
Sure. So, and beyond that, what have you got coming up? What are you working on that we should be on the lookout for? Because you say you do. Tell us a little bit about the Western, the weird Western stuff. That's always very cool.
Oh, Don Cuevo, The Frontier Exorcist. I've done, right now, there's been about three stories in the canon, and there's a fourth one that's definitely coming out later this year in the Pulp Works Press Halloween anthology. Every year, Pulp Works Press does a different holiday-themed anthology.
Mm-hmm.
It's about this mysterious character who is kind of sort of based on Clint Eastwood's Man with No Name, who wanders around with his assistant, the beautiful Mexican Dolores,
mm-hmm.
solving people's problems, but each person who gets their problem solved has to also pay a very dark price.
Ooh. Very cool.
Once again, I know where he's from. I've been dropping hints here and there as to what he's doing and what his background is. And maybe one day we'll find out everything laid out. Although, of course, I know that generally when you lay everything out, you get Wolverine Origins. We don't want that.
Right. Okay, so you've got... that character, you say that's coming up, you have another one in the works coming up this year, you say? I'm trying to keep it straight.
Yeah, this year. Okay. In the Pulp Works Press Halloween Annual 2017.
Okay.
And okay. I've got a couple other stories that I'm trying to place.
Okay. That reminds me, I didn't talk about your background, but I remember you're reading your background that you've actually done work for... well, talk a little bit about what you've done professionally in the past that I kind of missed at the very beginning.
Well, the biggest... I did a couple of stories in the old Byron Price Marvel series.
Was a
Hulk story for the Ultimate Hulk and two X-Men stories. There was going to be an Avengers story because they were putting together a book called 50 Years of the Avengers.
Uh-huh.
And the Avengers story was going to be my tribute to the West Coast Avengers run.
Nice.
And unfortunately, Byron Price lost the license before that book came out. I also spent 15 years as a staff freelancer on Fangoria Magazine, which I understand is now kaput as of this week.
Oh, really? Yeah, I had the very first issue of that when it came out. I remember very clearly having that.
Mm-hmm.
That was a long time ago. That was back, like, in the 80s, maybe?
Yeah. Well, it's just going on. It went on for about 30 years or thereabouts.
Yeah. Yeah, that was Starlog's horror magazine, if I remember correctly.
Exactly, yes. Originally founded by Bob Martin.
Yeah.
And I did book reviews for them. I did feature articles. For a brief time, they had an online literary magazine, and I edited that for them. Unfortunately, sometime around 2008, I want to say, at then present editorial decided that they didn't have to pay their freelancers.
Hmm. That's not good.
So I said, look, if you're not going to pay me, you know, you're going to say I get exposure, but exposure is what you die of.
That's good. That's a good line.
So, you know, I had to to eventually leave. If it wasn't for that, I probably would still be writing for them to this day.
Mm-hmm. And you say they're done? So that was... Oh, okay, yeah. So they're done now?
Apparently, they are finished publishing.
Wow.
But this is fairly recent, so I don't know if this, how verifiable that
okay. that is. Hmm. Let me ask you this. You're talking about Byron Price. Were you working on it with Keith DeCandido?
Mainly I worked with Steve Roman and after that with Dwight Zimmerman.
Okay.
Keith DeCandido had left by the time I was contracted to do my stuff.
Oh, okay. He's a friend of the show and an old friend of mine, and I was just that when you said Byron Price, that rung a bell for sure. But yeah, okay, very cool. All right. Well, any other last things you want to throw out there about Shadow Legion or your other work before we wrap it up for today?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that was it.
Okay. Well, this year I resolved I wanted to write some new characters, and I figured I did my Defenders. Maybe it's time to start doing my Avengers. Only this Avengers is the 1960s British TV series.
Okay, good.
Because that is my all-time favorite television show.
Okay.
So we've got a superhero version of the Avengers coming down the pike called The Hood and Hyde.
Ah. Interesting.
So I've been working on that as well as the new books. The third book, like I said, is in the can. It will hopefully come out within the next year or two. It's called Machina Ex Deus.
Oh, okay. That's very cool. That's a nice twist.
Which might give you a hint as to who's coming back in that book.
Okay.
And that, like I said, features a 52,000 word main novel.
Right.
And a 75,000 word Black Talon story, which came about because I polled the fans as to which character they wanted to see in solo action, and that was the answer I got.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Other than that, I know I'm supposed to write a Domino Lady story for Ron at some point.
She's blowing up. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, I did a comic book story for Ron for All-Star Pulp Comics.
Nice.
With my good friend, Michelle Sciuto.
Okay.
And I loved writing her. So I said to Ron, if you ever want to do something with the character, let me know. And I may even have a novel idea, which crosses her with another public domain character and answers the question, where does she get all those, all that Yinchi knockout drop stuff?
Hmm. Okay.
So, there's stuff coming.
Nice.
It may take a while, but it's coming.
That's how it works. Yep, that's how it works. All right. Very good. All right. Well, Thomas, I really appreciate you coming on the show today, and I hope that this book does great for you. This is a 2017 book, right? So it's not in the running for the Pulp Factory Awards this year. Do you have anything that's up in the running for the current awards? Because we're right now, as we record this right now, we're in the last day or two of nominations for this year's Pulp Factory Awards. I only have one thing that came out last year. This is a pretty... I'm trying to make up for it in 2017 by putting several things out, but I only had the Eighth Sentinels book come out last year. I'm hoping that Chris can get a nomination for his artwork in it. We'll see how that goes. But did you have anything in the running for 2016 awards?
I don't think that anything that mine got. Now, I only did two things, which was a Dreamcatcher story and both Dreamcatcher stories. What am I saying? But I don't think any of them got into the nomination process. So,
okay. Well, it's still open, so you got a couple more days if somebody wants to slip them in there, you know. So we'll see what happens.
Right.
Okie doke. All right. Well, we'll wrap up with that. Thanks again for coming on, and I hope people run out and pick up Shadow Legion Nightmare City, and, of course, go get the first volume, Shadow Legion New Roads to Hell from Airship 27 Productions by Thomas DJ. And, Thomas, thanks for coming on. I hope we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you very much for having me, Ben. It's been a pleasure.
All right. And that's going to do it for The Rocket for this week. We're going to get on out of here, and we'll see you folks down the road.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Hi, I'm Jared Albrick, the yard sale artist, and I'm also the art director over at White Rocket Books. Quick question, what do you get when you take a fast-paced Alistair MacLean novel, put it in a blender with a Star Trek DVD, and some G.I. Joe figures? I'm pretty sure you get award-winning sci-fi novelist Van Allen Plexico's first foray into the world of comics, a new comic miniseries based on Plexico's novella Cold Lightning. Cold Lightning is a small part of Plexico's expansive space opera series of novels called The Shattering. Now, real quick, I want to give a quick heartfelt thank you to all the folks who helped us reach our crowdfunding goal over on GoFundMe. We are so excited to get this comic series underway. Now, depending on when you hear this ad, we're either still working away on this space adventure, or it may be available already. The best way to find out is to head over to whiterocketbooks.com and see what the latest is. While you're there, you can look into all the novels of the Shattering series or Plexico's very popular Sentinels novel series. There's plenty to see, so come check us out. Once again, that's whiterocketbooks.com.